And she says, boy, on Sunday morning, I really like to get spiritual. She says, topic of that meeting is going to be we walk a spiritual path. So I've been really looking forward to all her talks, but this one especially. Dottie?
I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Dottie Shore. Hi. Hey, isn't that a gas that I'm going to come back next year? You all better be here, too, okay? Oh, I'm just delighted. That really thrilled me to my toes to think that I have done the job, that I have been what I wanted to be, was your trusted servant. And I hope I've served you in the way that I've been praying to serve you. And if I've done anything at all to help any of you, and you go down from this mountain, please give the glory to God. Because without him, I wouldn't even be up here talking. And I'm not being overly modest, I mean that. If I had come up here this weekend and given you my ideas, you'd all gone down there and gotten drunk. But when I give you the ideas that were given to me so freely and so lovingly by everybody I've ever talked to and by this God-given book and my higher power, I truly mean it. If I've helped you, you thank God for it. This morning, I'd like to share with you some prayers that we say in AA. And I think that we say them, you know, like a parrot, if you're like I am. I was taught when I was a child to say the Lord's Prayer, and I used to say, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, kingdom come, will be done on earth as in heaven. This is day of daily bread. Did you ever do it that way? Just like a parrot, had no idea what I was saying. I remember that when I first attended my first meeting at North Hollywood, up above the podium, they have a huge, big serenity prayer. It's all in scroll, and it's very beautiful. And I used to sit there in my days of shaking out and trying to get my head straightened around and read those words of the serenity prayer, and it didn't mean a thing. They were very comforting, and I liked them, but it didn't mean a thing to me. I think I shared with you the first night that when I went home to my sister's funeral, that this old man came, and over to me. His name was Ken Coffey. He since has died sober. And he said, I want you to take the serenity prayer home. And I said, oh, Ken, I know the serenity prayer. He said, not the way I'm going to give it to you. He said, when you're home at that funeral and you're with all those people who drink, you simply say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change today. God, grant me the courage to change the things I can today. Grant me the wisdom to know the difference today. Now, if we'll think about that, you know, you can accept anything for today that would appall you if you had to go on forever. As the time has come on in my sobriety, I've many times said that serenity prayer. I think my biggest problem and your biggest problem is always trying to change what we cannot change. That's persons, places, and things, and accepting what we should change. You know, most of the time I'll say, well, I have to accept it. When the last part of the prayer to have the wisdom to know, so many times the thing I'm trying to accept is something I could change. And so I start analyzing the prayer. I think I suffer sometimes from analysis paralysis, dig things apart, but I thought, what does this prayer really mean? We really don't know who the instigator or the author of this prayer. There's been many people. Somebody by the name of Heingold was the last I heard. Many say it's an anonymous prayer. But it doesn't make any difference because whoever gave us this prayer in printing was given from God through that person again, so we can always give the glory to God. But if you'll think about the first sentence, you'll know that you're addressing this to God because it says God. Now, however you believe in God is up to you. But to me, God is my daddy God. He is the person who loves me more than anybody else, and I know that I have much love in this room. And so I'm asking him for something. I'm asking God to grant me. In Southern California, I'm sure you know, there's a lot of land grants years ago where the government would grant land, these parcels of land to people, and it meant free, you know, no taxes, no anything. They just gave it to it free. It's a grant. And we're asking God to grant us something. Now, when he grants us something, there's no strings attached to it. It's free, unearned, unmerited, unwarranted, given to us with we don't have to pay anything back. And we're just addressing him and asking him to grant us the serenity. Now, the word serenity means peace of mind and a quiet heart. So we're asking God to grant us freely a gift of serenity. I believe, and I don't know that you do or not, but I believe everything that you and I have is a gift of God. I think my sobriety is a gift of God. I believe the fact that I believe in God, my faith is a gift of God. The thing I need the most is the gift of trust. I love God with all my heart. I believe with him with every fiber of my being. Sometimes I don't trust. And I have to learn how to trust And I have to ask him then for the gift of trust. Everything comes from God. There's nothing in this world that is not made or is not made by God. It doesn't make any difference what it is. This microphone, the table, everything was made by him. And so we have to ask him for gifts of trust, of patience, of tolerance. And if you lack any of these things, ask him for these things. We're asking him now to grant us the gift of serenity. And you can ask him for the gift of trust and faith and all the things that you lack. People say to me all the time and constantly, I don't have enough faith. Well, dear hearts, you only have to have the faith of a grain of mustard seed. That's the smallest seed in the whole world, and yet that plant will grow to be big enough for the birds to roost in. When I was in Jerusalem, we were riding on a bus, and I always liked to sit up in the front, and the bus driver stopped the bus and got off and went over and picked a kind of a long pod off a tree or a bush, and he came back and he said to me, let me have your hand. And I put my hand out, and he pushed some of this stuff in my hand. It was not as big as a grain of pepper. You know what pepper looks like? And I said, what's that? He said, those are grains of mustard seed. They're not as big as a piece of pepper, you know, pepper. Anyhow, I couldn't get over it. I kind of thought that a mustard seed was like you see in a necklace, and it's in a magnifying glass, and it's about, you know, the size of a seed. But it's like a grain of pepper. It's so small. That's all the faith you have to have. I learned a long time ago, I don't have to have great faith in God. I have to have faith in a great God. There's a great deal of difference. All I need is a grain of mustard seed that size to ask him. So now I'm asking him for the most important thing for me, and that's to grant me the serenity, quiet, loving heart to accept. See, our problem with all of us is the lack of acceptance. We can't accept the fact that we aren't the most beautiful thing, or that we're not the most wealthy, or we can't accept the fact that we're alcoholic, or that we aren't married, or that we are married, or we can have kids, or we can't have kids. We never can accept life on its terms. And that's where we're always in collision with something or somebody, even when trying to be kind. So I'm asking him now, God, to grant me, freely, no strings attached, a gift of serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Now, I'm not asking him for guts and willpower. You know, say, well, I guess I'm going to have to accept it. I'm not asking for resignation. I'm asking for a gift of serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And when it comes right down to it, the things I cannot change are the world and the people. I cannot change anything out there. The AA book tells me the only person I can change is me and my reaction. I cannot change anyone out there. So when I'm in collision with something, I jump back to the serenity prayer. Traffic especially is hard for me. I'll get through at 6 o'clock counseling, and I'll take a quick shower and eat some dinner and get in my car and drive, say, through a 7 o'clock merging traffic to go, say, to Long Beach or El Monte. And traffic is especially hard for me because, you know, I get all tied up. Doesn't everybody know who I am on that freeway? Why don't they park at the side and let me go through? And I get all upset, and I finally sit back and say, hey, God, grant me the serenity to accept the traffic. And I'll pray or meditate. And, you know, always, for some reason, I always get to the meeting on time. And yet I get there much more at peace than when I'm tied up in us. Now, many of you guys are driving on the freeway all the time in your job, and it must be horrendous. And so you can ask God to grant you the gift of serenity to accept the traffic, to accept the rain, to accept whatever's going on in your life, because it's not what happens to us that counts. It's our reaction, and we are overreactors. We're bad reactors. They call us bad actors, but we're not bad actors. We're overreactors. So you say that first part now, and that's the world and its people, remember. Then you're asking God again for another gift. You're saying, God, and you're addressing him again, to grant you, which is free, unearned, unmerited, gift of courage. So much difference in courage and in guts and willpower, in determination. So many times I've asked God to grant me the guts to change what I can. And it's not going to do you any good. You run out of guts after a while. But now the gift of courage is entirely different. Courage is way and above and beyond you. It doesn't mean you won't be afraid. In fact, I think courage is doing something in spite of the fact you're afraid. If you want to know what my opinion of it is, you can look in the dictionary and see what the word courage means. But now you're asking for the courage, a gift of courage, to change the things you can. And I've come down to believe that the only thing I can change is Dottie Shore. Me and my reaction. It's the only person in the world. I remember when I first got to AA, I kept saying to my sponsor, if my mother had just been different, if my husband would just change, if my kids wouldn't do this. And she said to me, honey, you're going to have to learn that you're going to have to change no one but yourself. And I cried and I said, why me? Now, why in the world does it have to be me to change? Why can't they change? And she said, you know, one day you're going to thank God that you're the only one you can change. Because if you wait for them to change, you'll be a gray-haired old woman. Well, under this blonde, gorgeous hair this morning is a lot of gray. You've got to know that. And my mother died 11 years ago without changing. My ex-husband is still doing his thing. He hasn't changed. And isn't it great that I didn't have to wait for those people to change? Because I'd be dead. I had to have the courage to change what I could, and that was me and my reaction. And so many times, it's not what happens, it's the way I react to it. Now, I am an overreactor, but I'm kind of glad because, see, nobody's happier than Dottie Shore when she's happy. Nobody's more thrilled than I am. The same token, nobody's as sad when they're sad. You know, the old pendulum just swings back and forth. But I can change me and my reaction. I can be more tolerant with God's help. I can know and live and let live. So many times, because I'm a perfectionist and you are too, we want people to fulfill the conditions the way we want. If they would just wear their hair different or not get their hair cut so short, or if they would take their beard off, or if they'd wear a beard. You know, it's almost if they would do as I want, then I'd be happy. And it'd be kind of a dull world, you know, if everybody was a carbon copy of me, because one of us wouldn't be needed. It would probably be me. So you want everybody to fulfill your conditions, and that's wrong. And the expression in the book that we have is live and let live. Really makes life a lot easier for you. Live the way you want. Wear your hair the way you want. Dress the way you want. But for God's sake and your sake, let the other person do what they want. And then you're going to have peace. So let's all together now join together and say the Serenity Prayer and think what we're saying. Ready? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, the wisdom is the ability to apply the knowledge you have. Wisdom and knowledge are two gifts of the Holy Spirit. The Bible will tell you that. I have much knowledge. The AA book says head knowledge alone is not enough. And there's nothing about the AA book that I don't know. There's nothing about the program I don't know. I can quote to you, as I told you, I have a photographic memory. But my problem is to have the wisdom to apply the knowledge that I know. Now, the wisdom to know the difference between what I have to accept and what I have to change is pretty vast. Because you can always get it mixed up, and if you're like I am, you rationalize and justify. And you say, but I can change this. But I can't do anything about that. And most of the time when I say I can't do anything about it is because I'm chicken. I don't want to get in there. I hate a one-to-one confrontation. I have a bad tendency when I'm hurt to just fade away. I've done this with my family. When they've hurt me badly, I don't go to them and say, hey, you know what, you hurt me. Because I can't stand a one-to-one confrontation. And so I'll just split. I won't call people on the phone. I'll just cut them out of my life. And that's very bad. Because I don't have the courage to change it by going and saying, hey, buddy, we got to sit down and talk. And so the prayer has been most informative to me, So many people will say always, well, I just ask God for serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Oh, that's not serenity. That's not acceptance, that's resignation. And resignation is like sitting in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth, not getting any place. Don't resign yourself to anything. Change it or accept it, but above all, ask for the wisdom to know the difference. This is a beautiful prayer we've been given. If you stop to realize, everything we've been giving in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't cost us anything. Doesn't cost us a thing. Now we come up here and we pay, or maybe you pay for my, you have paid for my trip. But I mean, as far as the wisdom and the knowledge and the help that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody has to pay. Yet everything else out in that world has a price tag on it. Now, as far as money is concerned, you don't have to pay, but I'll tell you what you do have to pay. You have to give it your all. It doesn't take much of a person to work this program, friends. But it takes all of you. It takes everything you've got. And if we put one-fourth the effort into working this program that we did out there lying and cheating and dying, the program would be very simple for us. Now, a long time ago, about 2,000 years ago, there was 12 disciples, and they came to the Master, and they said to him, "Teach us to pray." And he said, "You pray to our Father in heaven, saying, Our Father, which art in heaven." Now, this is a prayer that we say after every meeting. I have a lot of Jewish friends who are in Overeaters Anonymous. They were very upset when they would go to meetings and the Lord's Prayer would be saying, because they called it a Christian prayer. And I told every one of them, I said, "You go back to your rabbi and you ask what he thinks about this." And every one of them came back to me and said, "It's a beautiful prayer. Feel free to say it." And he said, besides, it was given by a Jewish rabbi. So they had no squawk about it. And so Jesus gave us this prayer. And to me, it is the most perfect prayer that will ever be said. And if you pray no other prayer in the whole world but this one, you've covered all the bases. And so we're saying, "Our Father." Now, I love that because, see, that cuts in half all this crazy stuff about him being some kind of a crackpot up on a cloud, keeping a set of books, some kind of a heavy judge or a wrathful God. You are addressing him as Father. Now, like begets like. And a cow can't have a horse, and a cat can't have a bird. And if we're saying "Our Father," it means that we are like him. And also, it doesn't say "my Father," it doesn't say "your Father." We say "Our Father." And there's something about holding hands at the end of a meeting and having everyone say "Our Father" that makes me feel such a close kinship to you. Because, see, you guys are my brothers. Every single one of you are my brothers, and I'm your sister. We have one common Father, and we're addressing him. We're taking our prayer, and we're addressing him, and we're saying "Our Father." Now, I had troubles, I told you, when I was searching for God to have a decent father relationship. And many of you people, I'm sure, have not had a good father-son relationship. But certainly you have a sponsor. Certainly you have someone in AA that you can look up to. Or maybe you have a Catholic priest that has been a dear friend to you that you call Father. Find a good relationship. Now, in the Bible it said that God looked down on man after he had created Adam. He looked down on man and he said, "It is not right for man to live alone." So he created a woman. And he created us in his image and likeness. Well, God the Father doesn't have arms and legs. He's pure spirit. Jesus, in my belief, was God in the form of man. But God the Father had no form except to be a spirit. Now, how can we say "Our Father" and that we are created in his image and likeness? And the only way I can do it is to tell you that I think God contacts us through the mind and through the heart. That's how he speaks to me. And that's how I'm like God. The spirit in me, or the deep part of me, is where God dwells, and that's where he contacts me. So in that way, I am made in his image and likeness. So I'm praying, "Our Father, which art in heaven," which cuts out all this stuff about him being, you know, an earthly father, that he pouts and he's mad and he turns his face from us and all that stuff I used to have. He's not an earthly father. And that's why we say, "Our Father, which art in heaven." Where's heaven? Well, we all somehow look up, and so we think of heaven as being up. But wherever God dwells, we are trying to say that we are praying to this kind of a Father, which art in heaven. Now it goes on to say, "Hallowed be thy name." And the word "hallowed" means holy, whole, wholesome, revered. And you know, I have to laugh. Someone said not too long ago that one of the reasons that Jesus came to earth was to teach us that his Father's last name wasn't Dammit. And I love that. Because we do. Now, I don't know about you, but I love it when you guys say, "Oh, Dottie." Or you take my face or you hug me and say, "Oh, Dottie." But now supposing you said, "Oh, Dottie." You're not hallowing my name. You're not treating my name nice. And I don't want that. And the one thing we like above everything else is to have someone remember my name. That's very flattering to me. And they asked today if you'd like to have name tags. I would love to have had name tags on you people. My dear buddy over there, I called him Ray last night instead of Ron. But he has that Raymond on his back, so it's all his fault, not mine. But the name of anything is very precious. And so we're saying, "Hallowed be thy name." Let's treat the name of God holy. Let's talk and say it with reverence. Don't hurl it out like, "God damn it." or God damn you. You know, we do that. We don't. People say, well, I didn't mean to say that. Well, if you don't mean it, don't say it. Whenever you use his name, use it as a holy word. Keep it hallowed. You know, I've done a lot of work, as I told you, with compulsive overeaders, and many of these people, I always say compulsive overeating is a Jewish disease, and alcoholism is a Gentile disease, because we have more Gentiles in AA and more Jews in Compulsive Overeaters Anonymous. Anyhow, there was a man came over one day to take an inventory with me, and when he got through, I took the papers to destroy them, and I happened to look down, and I saw that he had put the word God, G-D. And I said to him, how come you write it like that? And he said, we were always taught that you never put God's name spelled out on a piece of paper in case something would happen to that paper that would defame the name of God. So they never write the full name out. They put G-D for God, which is certainly hallowing his name, isn't it? And I thought it was very nice. I like that. So we're saying, hallowed be thy name. Let it always be in me. I've always said, let his name be holy. Now, because I am a Christian, it wounds me when people say, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, why? Do you like your name bandied around, or do you like to have someone say it nicely? Oh, Bob. Larry. You know. So watch out. Just watch what you're doing. If you love God and you're asking God to come into your life, then treat his name holy. Or don't say the prayer. We're saying, hallowed be thy name. Now we're saying, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I read an article not too long ago. It says, you better really strive on this physical plane to want God's will. Because if you get to heaven, it's going to be hell for you. Because it's all his will up there. I love that. So we're asking for his will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. And first we have to decide what God's will is. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it punishing? What do you think God's will is? Well, I've become to believe, and it certainly was not always, that God's will for me is better than anything I could think or pray for. I don't want my will. Two destructive forces in my life have been alcohol and my will. I used to think it was everything else, the weather and my husband and my mother and my kids and the economic conditions. I always thought those were my destructive forces. They are not. The two destructive forces in my life are alcohol and my will. And you ask yourself if that isn't the same with you. And if you're an addict, if it isn't drugs. But your will is more destructive than anything else. And I'm asking in that prayer for his will to be done on this physical plane as it is in heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now we're also asking something that we all need. We're asking, give us this day our daily bread. Now you're not asking for a piece of bread like it's in that loaf back there. Daily bread means everything you will need for this day. Transportation, housing, money, health, love, food, a bed, roof over your head. What do you consider to be your needs for this day? And that's what you're asking for when you're asking him to give us this day, not this day and next week. And you know the EA program says we live one day at a time, and yet you and I are worried about what we're going to do next week. I have to laugh when I think that you've asked me to come back next year. If I'm alive, I'll be here, but you know, who knows? Nobody has any guarantee, but it's nice to look forward to. So you're asking him to give us this day. I have to think about many lessons that I've learned in the scriptures and in different stories. And if you don't learn to live one day at a time, you are going to be in trouble. There's 3 days that we are connected with. One is yesterday, one is tomorrow, another one is today. Now, AA taught me years ago that yesterday is a canceled check. And you don't sit at home delving through your canceled checks unless you have to look back for reference. You put the checks away in case you need it, but you don't sit day after day going through all those canceled checks. If you do, you're a little bit weird. That's all I got to say. But now then, tomorrow is a promissory note. And someone's giving you a promise that under certain conditions, maybe tomorrow, they'll do things. So you have a canceled check and you have a promissory note. Today is cash. What do you want? Well, I don't know about you, but I want cash. I don't want your promissory notes, and I don't want that old canceled checks. I want cash for today. Now, in plenty of places in the Bible, it says, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. One day at a time. Give us this day our daily bread. And like I said, it reminds me of the story of the children of Israel. When they left Egypt and were on their way to the promised land, God was so good to them. And the Jews are God's chosen people only in the fact that they are the only nation who ever believed in one God. People say, how come Jesus was a Jew? How come the Jewish people are the chosen ones? Now, I come from the lineage of the Gentiles, and my lineage had many gods, God of sun and moon and love and all that sort of thing. But the Jewish nation, the Jewish people, have always believed in one God. That's why Jesus came into that nation. Now, when he was to take them out from Egypt to the promised land, he told Moses that he would take care of everything they needed. So he had a pillar of cloud go by day. And when the cloud turned and went this way, they screamed and yelled. You know, that's not the way to go. At night, he had a pillar of fire. So they get to the Red Sea, and the Pharaoh's men are after him, and they're screaming, take us back to the flesh pots of Egypt. At least we'd be safe there. And Moses was told by the Lord to open the sea, and it opens up, and they go through dry shod. When the Pharaoh and his men come, the waters come back and drown them. He performed miracle after miracle after miracle for the children of Israel. They walked for 40 years, and they never wore out their shoes. This isn't a fable. This is true. They never wore out their clothes. Now, when I was in Israel, it would take 14 days, 2 weeks, to go from Egypt to the Holy Land. Why do you suppose it took the children of Israel 40 years? They wandered in the desert for 40 years for the same identical reason that you and I wander in our own desert. We wander around like lost souls because we will not keep our eyes on our higher power. Now he told them, Moses, to tell these people not to store up any manan. And manan was like a heavenly bread that fell from heaven. That he would see they had everything they needed. But they didn't believe him. They were afraid they wouldn't have enough for tomorrow. So they took this heavenly manan and they stuffed it in their clothes. Now they were out in the middle of the desert. And the maggots and the flies almost destroyed them. So they didn't believe it. You and I don't believe that if we pray to God, he's going to take care of my finances, my insurance policy, my car, my kids. We're no different. And I think the story of the children of Israel is an awfully good story for you and I to learn the lesson from. Simply say, give me this day my daily bread. Give me whatever I need, not all the things I want. So many of my wants would be so destructive. But I'm asking him to give me this day my daily bread, everything I need today. Now, what do I need today, this day? I need your love and acceptance. And God, thank you. Thank you for it. You've touched me very deeply. And I better not talk about it or I'll start to cry. But this beautiful retreat, the love I'll share in the car going home with the guys, and we'll go pick up Lynette, and we'll pick up Mike's wife, and they'll take me to the airport, and they'll give me hugs and kisses, and they'll put me on the plane. And the plane, I ask God to protect me and to give me journeying mercies and take me home safe. And one of my dear, precious babies will be there to meet me. And we'll go have dinner there, and then she'll take me home. And I'll get in my comfortable bed, and I'll say my prayers, and I'll thank God for another day of sobriety, and I'll go to sleep. And I will have had today my daily bread. I've got enough. I've got more than most people have. So when you ask God for your daily bread, don't be pigs. Don't be gluttons. Be so grateful to God that you have the things that you really need, because there's a lot of people out there that don't. I have a deep place in my heart for the children that are starving, and I have a little boy named Shantu that's in New Delhi, India, and I contribute to his support every month. He has two sisters and a father and a mother, and they live in a little mud hut with no toilet facilities. And his birthday was in January, so I sent $15 above, beyond what I give him. And he wrote me a letter back. Now, he wrote it in his language, but the people that do this interpret it. And he bought a cow with that $15. And he thanked me very much for the cow, because the calf, because as it grew older, it would help he and his father till the land to get food for his sisters and his mother. And we are so satiated with all material things, we don't even know what it's like to have those people over there. We've never gone to bed hungry. And yet we gripe and complain because we don't have what we want. So every time I say the words, give us this day our daily bread, I think of Shantu. little 7-year-old boy over in New Delhi who sometimes goes to bed hungry. I have more than I need, and I thank God for it. Give us this day our daily bread, and listen to this one. Forgive us our trespasses. Or as the song says, and many Protestant people say, forgive us our debts. Now, this prayer right in the middle has a real sneaky clause in there. And you're going to have to think what you say, because if you don't remember what you're saying in this, please don't ever say the Lord's Prayer, because it's kind of a catchy thing. You're saying, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive, or if we forgive. So you're saying, but I can't forgive her. No, she hurt me too great. Then that's the condition, dear friends, that you're putting on your forgiveness from God. You're asking God to forgive you as you, or if you forgive. Now, I'm perfectly selfish, and I want total forgiveness from God, and as long as I draw breath, I will miss the mark or sin. And I want him to have total forgiveness for me. I want to be wiped clean. Now, if I want that, I've got to do that for you and for my fellows. And that ain't easy. That's not easy. But I read a book one time about in a man's interpretation of this Lord's Prayer, and he gave me a very good idea. He said, and I'll take it back to the AA book. The AA book says, resentment shuts out the sunlight of God's love. If you have a resentment in your heart, you have closed off the light of God coming into your life. Like, God, just a little resentment's going to do that. So what do you think stealing and fornication and adultery all the things you and I do, what do you think those things do as far as the sunlight of God's love coming in? Now, is God a heavy, exacting judge? No. But I learned this. I had a baby, an AA baby, who was a darling, cute little person. And I went over the first time to pick her up, and she invited me to come in before a meeting to have a cup of coffee because I was a little early. And dear friends, I walked into the filthiest house. I don't mean messy. I mean the filthiest house I was ever in. She poured me a cup of coffee, and I couldn't drink out of the cup. I never went back in her house again. I didn't wipe her out. I went every Tuesday and every Thursday and picked her up because she didn't drive. And when she'd say, come in, I'd say, no, I'll wait in the car. I'm reading or I'm listening to music. Never went back in her house again. And I believe that God feels that way about me and my heart. If I am filthy inside, he will not come in, and you can't blame him. I've got to clean up my heart, clean up my act, if I want God to come in and dwell with me. And yet we are so surprised. We say, I pray and I pray and God doesn't answer. When I pray and I pray and God doesn't answer, I'll say, what stands between me and him? Have I got a heart full of iniquity? Have I got some unconfessed thing? Have I got some hostility or resentment or hatred for someone? Because if I do, I better clean it up first. And then God will come into my life. And you can't blame him. If I won't go into a filthy house, why do we ask him to come in? And so there's a little prayer that I'd like to give you. If you have a resentment in God, they're the easiest things for you and I to pick up. If someone has really wounded you, if you think in inventory and you look back on your mother and think what a bitch she was, or what that father did to you, or what your grandmother did, or what a school teacher did, and we all have it, you've got to do something about it. Now, in the scriptures it says, if you have aught against any, or anything against anybody, lay your gift down. Don't go to the altar. So your gift, of course, is your prayer. So you look in your life and you say, do I have anything against anybody? If I do, I'm going to have to come to terms with that. Because otherwise, I should not say that prayer. Because if I'm saying, I can't forgive them, then I'm putting a condition on my forgiveness with God. Do you understand what I'm saying? Forgive us as we forgive. There's a woman named Catherine Marshall, and she went over to Europe. She wrote a beautiful book called Beyond Ourselves. And she went through the castle of King Henry VIII. Now, King Henry VIII was the man who really split Christendom right down the middle, because he wanted to get married and he beheaded his wives and everything else. And she filled a tremendous resentment went through her. And King Henry VIII's been dead 400 years. But she hated him today. So she had to do a prayer of forgiveness. She had to ask God to help her forgive this man, because she didn't want anything to stand between her. Now I started thinking, is there anybody that in my past life or somebody I don't even know that I haven't forgiven? And I thought, yeah, Hitler. You'd be surprised, dear hearts, how many people I have coming to me who have relatives that were murdered in that Holocaust. And you mention Hitler's name and it just goes right through me. I've got to learn to forgive Hitler. That ain't easy. Then Nixon came to my mind and I thought, that man almost put us down. I hear Nixon's name and it kind of goes through me. I had to learn to do that. So I learned this prayer from someone else, and it says, I freely and fully forgive Hitler to the very best of my ability. I cut him loose and I set him free. He is free and I am free. Now, you never repeat the prayer of forgiveness for the same person unless there's a new injury, but every time the person that you are forgiving crosses your mind, you ask God's blessing on them. You just bless the socks off of them. Now, someone said, I can't do that. And Father John Doe, the one who wrote Sobriety and Beyond, he said, if you have to, say, bless the son of a bitch. Until you can get the word son of a bitch off. And eventually, if you bless them enough, you'll be able to say from your heart, bless them. Because sometimes, you know, you feel like something stick right in your throat when you say bless somebody that you hate that bad. And the more you bless them, the better it is. Now, the Bible says, if you have an enemy, heap blessings on his head. Don't condemn him. Don't wish him ill. But bless him and bless him and bless him. Now, anything that God blesses has to change. If you're asking God to bless him, either remove that person out of your life or they can be there and it doesn't bother you. But in the main thing, you are totally getting free. There is nothing standing between you and your higher power for forgiveness. And there's nobody in this room that has no sin. In fact, the scriptures say, if you say you're not a sinner, you're a liar and the truth isn't in you. We will all sin or fall short of the mark. The word sin means to fall short of the mark. So you get back now to the prayer and you say, forgive us our trespasses. And I stop right there every morning. And I'll say, Lord, is there anything I have against anybody? Is there any unconfessed thing in me? Show me. And I wait a few minutes. If there's nothing comes to my mind, then I go on with my prayer. But most of the time, I'll have something come to my mind and I'll say, Lord, forgive me for that. Or help me make amends for that. Now, am I being picky? Are we getting down there too finite? I don't think so. I want my heart to be a clean, wholesome, lovely place. And I want God to come in and dwell with me. Because without him, I'm nothing. I walked the face of this earth for a long time. And here was Dottie Shore over here without God. And she was a falling down, stammering, stuttering, helpless, hopeless alcoholic. And I'm not putting myself down. That's what I was. But you take Dottie Shore with God in her, with me keeping my heart clean enough to the best of my ability to invite him to come in. And hey, you know something? I'm somebody. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a child of God. I'm a daughter of the King. And you can't get better than that. And I have to work at it. Because I'm resentful, and I'm petty, and I lie, and I steal, and I criticize. Don't ever get any ideas in your head that any of us will ever be perfect. But I'll tell you this, I try to keep the wreckage of my past wiped away by asking God to forgive me and forgiving you if you hurt me. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive, or if we forgive, those who trespass against us. Now there's one statement in the Lord's Prayer that always confuses people, and it says, lead us not into temptation. And they're saying, what kind of a God did you have that you got to beg him not to lead you into temptation? Please remember that the Bible came down from the Greek to the Aramaic to the English, and there are the Aramaic to the Greek to the English, and there is many words that we can't translate. I'm sure you've heard the expression to be as meek as Moses. Now, what does the word meek mean to you and I? You know, kind of crawling on your belly, kind of a nothing. But the word meek means obedient. But there was no word that they could translate into ours. Now, the Lord's Prayer says, lead us not into temptation. Like we're asking God to please don't do this terrible thing by leading us down the road to temptation. And yet the translation probably should be, let us not be led. Let us not be led. And we are easily led. Somebody asked me in counseling here, since I've been here, if I thought it was wise for them to be in the company of their practicing addict friends. And I said, no, I do not think it's right for you to do that. And the AA book will tell us we must change our companions because we're so easily led. We have such peer pressure, and the young people out there have more peer pressure than anything I've ever seen. Sex is free. There's no morals out there. You're a square if you don't smoke a funny cigarette. And we're easily led by other people, and we're asking not to be led. to ask God to protect us from being led into temptation. There's a book out called The Sins That Are Admired of Many. You've heard the expression, oh, come on, Dottie, everybody does it. You know, don't be a square. Come on, you're missing half a life. I happen to be a celibate woman since I've been divorced, and I don't fornicate. And people say, my God, what do you do with your sex drive? You know, you're going to get sick. Oh, really? The sex drive, in my opinion, is the most forceful drive that we have. And I just take my sex drive and put it out in another way, like in here. I do great many works. I'm constantly going, and that's what happens to my sex drive. And I will not fornicate. I don't want just sex. I want love. And if I can't find it in totality, I'll go without it. I love Father Martin. You know, he spoke with me in Austin, and he said, most people say to him, how do you handle your sex drive now that you're celibate? He said, it's no sacrifice, no big deal on me. He said, I offer as a gift to God. And I offer my sexual drive as a gift to God. Ask him to calm my sex drive. Keep me calm. Help me to put it out in a forceful way. You know, to have sex is the easiest thing in the world. You can satisfy your appetite if you want, if that's all you want. See, I don't. I want things to be different. I want it to be clean and wholesome. And this generation, I'm sorry for these kids. Because they live together for 2 years, and then the bride walks down the aisle with a white veil and a gown on. You know, it's mockery almost to me. Why not commit yourself to marriage? But that's what they do, and the peer pressure, everybody does it, is very difficult on this young generation. And I feel sorry for them. Now, many of them are straightening around and doing right. But we're asking not to be led into temptation. Don't let me say, everybody does it. Because, see, I have a very sensitive conscience. And a lot of people can get by with a lot more than I can. But see, I try to walk a spiritual path. I try to say, what does God think of what I'm doing? Not what do you think of what I'm doing? Because if I please God, I please you. But constantly I have to ask to be led, not led into temptation. And there's many things out there to tempt us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And there's much evil out there. This world is pretty sick, you know that, and I want to be protected from it. I'm getting so I very seldom read the newspapers, I told you, because I can't stand it. I can't stand to see 30 young Negro kids killed, and they still can't find the killer, and it's going on. I can't stand that sort of thing. Deliver me from evil. For thine, and the last part of the prayer is a salutation. It's like wrapping up the whole thing in a package. For thine is the kingdom. Now we're again addressing God. It's his kingdom. For thine is the kingdom and the power. And you and I admit in the very first step, we are powerless. And the book says, there's one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And the prayer says, for thine is the power. Thine is the kingdom, and thine is the power, and thine is the glory. And see, my sobriety, I give full credit to God. My sobriety and what I've done for you this weekend, I give God the glory, because by myself I am nothing, but I can do all things through this program and through God. And so when you say the Lord's Prayer, think of what you're saying. If you say no other prayer, you've said the most perfect prayer that was ever given to us. It's covered every base. And at the end of the meeting, we'll say the prayer. And from now on, when you say it, think of what you're saying, especially when you come to the part, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive. Ask yourself, is there somebody I have something against? I had to do that with my mother. It was a long time before I could forgive my mother. I used to say, why didn't she want me? Why the hell didn't she leave me on somebody's doorstep? Why did I have to be born into that family where I've had to overcome so much? But you see, out of every seeming evil comes good. You guys today, I have great compassion and understanding. Out of every seeming evil, the Lord will bring good. All things work together for good to those who trust in the Lord. And our alcoholism and the degradation and the heartache we've had and the things we've gone through, we have been worked together for good to bring you and I together today. Out of that evil, God has brought good. We are sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are brothers and sisters, and we have one common God that we happen to call our higher power. I wish I could find the words from my heart. I'm not at loss for words. You know I'm very wordy. I have a gift of gab. It's a gift of God that I can get up here and tell you what's in my heart. But But dear God, I wish I could tell you how much I love you, how much you've done for me, and how much I know you'll continue to do for me. I promise you one thing. I will remember you in my prayers every night. Please remember me in yours. God bless you, and thank you from the bottom of my heart.